Welcome to the B-Side, episode number 17 of the podcast at Tuas Alliance Church. Today is February 25th, 2014. I'm Rhoda Brooks, your host, and with me is Pastor Steve Croker.
Hey.
And Pastor Tyler Crawford.
In uniform.
Hello.
In uniform.
Not
today.
Really uniform.
Matching.
I wish you guys, most of the time I don't wish that we were on video. I'm quite happy to be radio, but, or internet or whatever, but I wish that people could have seen you and Tyler like bopping along to the intro song today.
Yeah, well, we did it four times.
And we had to restart a couple of times. So that's a new U2 song, Invisible. I got to look at that when I go home. Part of the Red campaign raising, you said, funds for AIDS.
Red people.
Red people.
Yeah. Ending malaria and AIDS in Africa or something like this. The Red campaign, so that all the profits from that song
go to that.
Go to the Red campaign.
I have to check it out. Hopefully today. We won't apologize for last week. Apparently the podcast was crackly. So if you didn't make it through our whole awesome podcast last week, then we apologize for that.
Well, I guess that means if they didn't make it, I don't have to make an apology. So this is perfect.
And hopefully today's okay because there was like a big rumbling noise underneath us before because they've started the...
I had chili.
Tyler. Oh my goodness.
Sorry.
There's too also easy, the bathroom. The bathrooms are being renovated. And so like we come in, Tyler gave me a ride to work today, and Steve's losing it. We come into work today, and I'm like, oh, because I've been here a really long time, and I'm like, they're ripping out my childhood. He goes, good, your childhood was ugly. And I'm like, that part of it was, yes. So
no one is going to deny that our bathrooms at the church are anything other than ugly. Like,
no, they need an update. They need an update. And it's happening.
That's okay.
So it's kind of exciting.
Yeah,
so
it's great.
So the rumbling noise coming
downstairs.
Is Rhoda's ugly childhood.
It's renovated.
Oh.
It's the rumbling of the destruction of anyway, so, so bathrooms are happening. Floors are going to be happening this week in the church building.
Any minute now. I think hopefully when we're done recording this podcast, there's someone there ripping out carpet.
That'd be so fun.
And if not, then I have to phone call to make because they're scheduled to be here any minute.
There you go.
That's great. Have a whole new church by Sunday.
That's the goal. Or we'll have a construction zone by Sunday. One of the two.
Yeah.
Right.
Wear your work boots just in case.
This is a hard, bring your hard hats to church Sunday.
Yeah. This is a wear your steel toes to church Sunday.
Well, at least it's winter and it's been snowing, so there shouldn't be any like flip-flops happening. If there is, there's different issues going on there. So
yeah.
I feel we are owed an apology.
You do?
For... It's unacceptable. I mean, I don't live in Vancouver.
Well, my goodness. You're a full-fledged Tawasanite now.
Yes.
It should be
spring.
Sunny.
Yeah.
It's sunny today, but this is spring.
Right? I loved it.
The Winter Olympics were on, and they happened in the spring.
Yeah.
Not in the winter. And, I mean, I mowed my lawn in January.
Yeah.
This is inappropriate. I feel like I've been wronged.
Are you taking this up with God? Are you taking this up with the big guy?
And you know what,
somebody.
Steve?
I think Russ Lacate, I don't know, somebody.
Russ Lacate, not God.
I think
you
touched on something that I've kind of picked up on since I've lived in the Lower Mainland. People who are born and bred generally in the Lower Mainland love days like we've had the last couple of days. Snow is here. Oh, it's wonderful.
It's true, because I'm that person.
Most of us who didn't spend parts of our life, if we lived anywhere else
in
Canada.
You lived in Prince George.
Yeah, I grew up in Prince George, went to school in Saskatchewan. Steve was in school. We know what winter is. Like, we know what real snow is.
I did 2 years in Lethbridge.
Bully for you. The point I'm trying to make is
that
anybody who's experienced real winter hates this because generally one of the biggest benefits about living where we live is the absence of a real winter. That's why if I wanted to snow in the winter, I would live, I don't know, anywhere else in Canada.
You know, and I was going to talk about, like, I did these devotions earlier this week, and it talked about thankfulness and how that deals with, like, complaining
I'm thankful
and
about
criticism.
Something.
Yeah. What are you thankful about?
I checked on my weather app. I keep a number of cities I never want to live in just to keep encouraged, right?
Oh, my goodness.
So I flipped over to Saskatoon this morning, and today the current temperature with the wind chill today is minus 44.
So you're going to call yourself out on your own sniveling for,
they're calling for 8 degrees today here in Tawasin.
Yeah.
So that is a 52-degree difference in weather. So,
I was one of those people that does the opposite.
You look at warm places.
Like, this is what I have on mine.
Palm Springs,
where my mom and dad winter. And like, anytime I'm feeling bad about myself, I'll look at it and be like, Ray and I, my wife, will have this conversation. Maybe we need to go to Palm Springs again. Let's see if we can find
it. I always look because it's like 6 degrees and raining. I'm like, oh, another rainy day. And then I flip over and go, oh, hey, -41.
That's probably better.
That could be worse.
Well, I love it because I live in like the Windsor Woods complex that already looks like a little barbarian village. And so like when it snowed yesterday, it was like living in a ski. It was like being at Whistler. I walk around, get a Starbucks, feel like you're on holidays.
The biggest snow thing day. Is, I'll say, I don't hate.
I wouldn't want it all the time.
Yeah, and I don't hate snow. I just hate 90% of people who live in the Lower Mainland trying to drive in the snow. Like, I like how parking lots. So I worked at home yesterday because it was nuts and my car's four-wheel drive and has terrible tires, so I didn't want to die. My wife came home. We have a four-wheel drive. I've owned a four-wheel drive for 4 years living in Vancouver. Yesterday was the first day I actually had to use four-wheel drive to get out of a Starbucks parking lot in White Rock.
It's rough.
But I'm like, how come just a little snow means that the parking lot goes from having 27 spaces to 4? Like, that people, like, don't, like, they just are like, oh, snow, need 14 feet of stretch room. Like, let's park like morons.
I saw your post on Facebook. Snow is stupid. That is all.
Yeah.
You got some flack for that one.
But it's all, the funny thing is, all from people who don't live.
Yeah, they don't feel sorry for you.
No, they don't feel sorry for me. And I'm not looking for sympathy. I'm just trying to say, like, I live here. Like, I live, like, eight blocks from the ocean. Like, it shouldn't snow.
I was thinking about you yesterday, Steve. I figured you must be making snowmen.
Yeah, I made some snowmen.
Snow people? Did you make any snow women?
They were non-gendered.
They were non-gendered.
They had neither snow anatomies.
Did you make... They were neither... Oh, my goodness. This podcast is good. Like, snowmen we got are, from rumbling and they're not, to, like, snow
they're
anatomy.
They're not gendered. They're just three snow balls people. Of snow with some sticks in it. They're not...
Did you make a family?
I made two snowmen.
Did your kids make them with you?
Yeah, they were there.
They were there. You should have made like a whole snow family.
Oh, it got dark.
It could have been like your sign, like the people.
It was after work, so I don't need up so much time. It's bedtime. Oh. Not for me.
He was busy making.
I'd stay up past 6:30, but the kids had to go.
I just want to clarify that Steve does not go to bed when the sun goes down.
No.
No matter what time of year it is.
Not a vampire. No, wait. Vampires get up when the sun comes down.
Yeah, you're confused.
I don't know any vampires.
A little rattled. I'm going to move on.
Yeah, people sent in questions.
Yeah.
They're going to send in questions after this podcast. Like,
what's okay. Tyler's
How
deal?
Many snow angels did Tyler make yesterday?
Zero snow angels. But I made some...
Snow bison.
Yeah, I was trying to think something big. I made some snow buffalo.
Okay,
that just means I fell down.
I'm going to move on to a question. We had a question sent in. Question, and the question was actually not about the sermon on Sunday. This particular question wasn't. It's actually about someone who has been reading through the Book of Noah. And
the Book of Noah.
The Book of Noah. Oh my goodness! I just said that.
Is that the Bible of the Maccabees?
Can we take back? We need to take back this whole podcast, and then we need to take back that section where I actually said the Book of Noah because I'm never going to live that down. Now,
welcome to the B side. This is episode
take 5. Okay.
So where is the Book of Noah found?
Anyway,
exactly.
Oh my goodness. Oh, in the story of Noah, chapter 6, verse 13, God talks about destroying the people of the earth. We see that, okay, all our laughing here, by the way, is not in disrespect to the question, only my trying to reiterate it. Okay, God talks about destroying the people of the earth. We see that he destroyed the people and creatures, except for the ones he saved, left on earth, but the earth itself was not destroyed. Are we taking this too literally? Is the question.
Taking what to literally?
I think the question is, it says, Genesis 6:13, I've determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence through them all. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. But God doesn't destroy the actual earth, like the planet. He destroys all the living things on the earth. So am I reading it too literally when it says destroy the earth?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the answer is yes, a little bit. But the maybe some people don't realize that the flood story is written in such a way that it's intentionally mirroring the creation story, in especially in the language and the way it flows, some of the words that are used both in Genesis 1 and 2 and then again here in chapter 6 to 8. So the idea is the flow of Genesis goes, God creates, sin enters, and then as they, you know, as you get to chapter 3, sin spreads. Instead of subsiding, it gets worse and it spreads and spreads. God then uncreates the earth through the flood, and then God recreates through the subsiding of the flood. So there's this idea of sin spreads and God uncreates his creation because of how sin has damaged it, and then recreates through the subsiding of the flood. So, for instance, in Genesis, one little example, in Genesis 8:13, it says, in the 601st year, in the first month, the first day of the month, the waters were dried off from the earth, and Noah removed the covering of the ark. And he talks about, like, it's the waters are subsiding, but it's very emphatic about the first year, first month, first day. It's just little clues like this along the way in the story are pointing us towards uncreation and recreation. So God doesn't literally, like, destroy the planet like something like a superstar destroyer in Star Wars blowing up a planet. It's not destroying the planet, but there's a sense of uncreation, and the world is returning to the watery chaos of Genesis 1. Like, there's a, you're laughing at me. So Genesis 1, right, there's a watery chaos, and God brings order into the chaos as part of creation, and then it returns to watery chaos and then emerges from watery chaos, and it's a whole new beginning. That's the kind of the flow of the flood story. So he doesn't actually blow up the planet, but he does uncreate the earth and recreate the earth. And it's a lot of imagery and, though, pointing that way.
Yeah, and part of it, I would add, not that there's a whole lot to add to that, but is that to destroy something doesn't necessarily always look the way, you know, we think it should look, like implosion or like actually dissolving the planet itself. But you can kill something often by killing what makes it up. So, for example, you could kill a church without knocking the building over, right? Like, you know, the people could go. And if the people are gone, it's just a building, right? So part of that is just what makes that. I was thinking, like, from a philosophical standpoint, well, what makes, what gives the earth life? Is it not the living things on it?
Yeah, I would say, like, he destroys by returning it to the watery chaos of prior
I've never heard
to creation.
That phrase before. Can you say it again?
Watery chaos.
Watery chaos.
I've never heard it. I've heard it like 19 times.
That's
a good way to put it. I actually have never heard it. I like it.
Watery like that's chaos. Genesis 1:2. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. So before, and then God says, let there be light. So before God begins his seven-day create, like the creative action.
I've never noticed that before.
Is that there is this watery deep, and God is, the Spirit is hovering over the watery deep.
So it,
and the flood returns us to Genesis 1:2.
So there's,
uncreates.
There's this thought I had now that at the creation of the earth as we know it, the universe was it in existence? Like, you know, like...
Now you're in it. That's a different question.
I know. No, I know. But this is the first... Like, I never thought about this before. That,
so,
like,
so you should write a question into the podcast for next week.
But
so,
then I got to answer it myself.
So some people would say... One of the arguments about how old is the earth, this is not what we were intending to get into, is that between verse 2 and verse 3 is a billion jillion years. So God has created the materials, step 1, verse 1 and 2, in the beginning. So the question is in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth? Is that the title for the chapter, or is that the first action? In the beginning God, so it could be, one way to read it is, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. In other words, what he's saying in verse 1 and 2 is that God created the matter, the substance, the materials with which he would create the world. But then it doesn't say this, but maybe between verse 2 and 3 is a billion years where the materials are present, but they are chaotic, disordered, there's watery chaos, and there's nothing good or beautiful, useful about it. And then in verse 3, maybe just several thousand years ago, God took those ancient materials and formed them into, you know, the beautiful world that we know in the scripture. So that's one of the propositions which says, so one of the theories about the age of the earth and how God created is he created the matter, but it was chaotic and not good.
So that's like the thrust of the argument between the young and the older.
So that these guys are saying God built, God created the earth recently using really, really old materials. So if you carbon date it, like the matter, the molecules, the substance of what God created with is billions of years old, but it was only 6,000 years ago that he made it. That's one way of reading it. Another way of reading it would be that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth is the title of the chapter. And it starts with the without form and void and God created. I mean, then we could get into how long is a day? Is a day literally 24 hours?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it a period
of time?
You
know what? It makes me think, like,
all these sorts of things. And in the end, a lot of those questions, I think we're asking all the wrong questions about Genesis.
Yeah.
We weren't planning to get into this.
Sorry. No, we totally weren't. But it makes me think of, you know, like, people get so... I don't think those questions are people... I mean, this is what the podcast is. People sending questions. People wrestle with stuff all the time. But I was just reading this week about, you know, that we only see through the murky view of things right now. Mm-hmm. And until God calls us back to him, we won't get a clear picture of it because we couldn't even handle a clear picture of it. And I think it's funny, interesting how people, like, if they can't figure God out and they can't figure out something that would blow their minds if they understood it, then they're not sure God's real. And I'm like, if we could figure it out, I don't know what I would really think about him. You know, like we have such an unclear picture of things right now.
I think we read Genesis all wrong when we ask, we demand it to give us answers to our scientific questions. Genesis 1 was not given to us so we'd know how old the earth is. It's not the point. We could maybe learn some things about that, but that wasn't the reason. It's a polemic. A polemic is a style of writing which is mocking and... arguing against a worldview, an idea of something, right? So what is happening in Genesis 1 is they are mocking and teaching against the creation stories and myths of their pagan neighbors as this story is given to Israel, who taught all sorts of things, like that the earth was one big accident, you know, and in some of the, you know, the ancient Babylonian and Egyptian stories where, you know, the earth was created through the death of one of the gods, and it's out of the carcass of one of the gods that this earth emerged. So the earth is by accident, it's evil, it's... There's all these different ancient myths about how the earth was created. And against them all, with them as the backdrop, we're given this... actual story of the creation of the earth. And
in context of redemption.
Yeah, and what stands out about Genesis 1 versus the ancient myths of the beginning of the world, like where the points of difference is where you're going to see the point of the story, right? And the point, therefore, of Genesis 1 is we learn that creation is good. That was not the teaching of the other ancient peoples. They believed it was broken and evil by nature, but we learn that the earth was good by nature. It was created good and sin distorted it, but it was good. We learn that it was ordered and purposeful versus accidental and chaotic, which is what the ancients believed. So we're told that there's purpose and design and beauty and that humans were the pinnacle as image bearers. These are the types of things we learn from Genesis 1. That's the point, is that this world that we live in is designed, beautiful, good, purposeful, ordered, structured. There's a reason. And that's what stands out against all the other ancient stories, is that it was chaotic and evil. The gods accidentally made it and came out of someone's... It was born out of conflict and pain, and versus God decided, chose, designed, built, you know. So that's the point of Genesis 1, I would say, is what's the nature of the world we live in? It is beautiful, good, structured, ordered, designed by a good God.
And we could say the same. I think we could parallel that very easily, like you were saying, with the Noah story and with the flood, that God intentionally uncreated, to use, steal a term from you, and then recreated through essentially, from what the text tells us, the one person, the one family that was obedient, that mm-hmm. was wanting to follow mm-hmm. God's path for their life.
Well, I have one more other, more like a trivia type question that this person has sent in, and I want to talk
baseball?
About it.
Because I
No. So chapter 6, verse 19, we see that God asked Noah to bring two of every kind of onto the ark. Then in chapter 7, 2 to 3, Noah is told to take seven of every kind. When he actually loads... I've just lost my voice. When he actually loads them on the ark, in verses 8 to 9 and in verse 15, we see they came in pairs. So what is it?
Oh, I got this.
They didn't write what is it, but, you know, that's basically the question. You got it?
They brought... If I remember correctly, and I'm pretty confident that it's in here somewhere, is that... They brought seven, they took two, meaning took the best two of the species. Is that not accurate?
Steve?
I think...
oh, you don't know Rhoda?
No, I don't have an answer. I'm just hosting.
Is it seven or seven pairs? In chapter 7, verse 2 and 3, it says, "Take with you seven pairs of all clean animals." The male and his mate, and pairs of the animals that are not clean, the male and his mate, and seven. See, but the pairs, it's actually, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, the word pairs is implied, but not in the text. And so, you know, the question is, it takes two of every kind, and then seven of the, two of the unclean and seven of the clean. But then it talks about pairs later, and seven is obviously not a pair. But I think that it's implied that it's not seven, but seven pairs of the clean animals and two of the unclean animals. So they have way more of the clean animals. But like this, the ESV here has read the flow of the grammar and read this as seven pairs, and they've put that word in. That's how they're reading it. But some translations might only say seven. But if they say, you know, take a pair of these and seven of those, does that mean seven or seven pairs? And so they're reading the pairs as implied.
So I'm wrong.
Point goes to Steve.
Yeah. So I think how many animals did they take? They took two pairs of all the unclean animals and seven pairs
of the
clean animals.
Which actually makes sense, because
sheep, cattle, goats.
Yeah. The clean animals are what they're going to eat.
Eat and sacrifice. Yeah.
So there's a level of, yeah.
So he gets out and they make a sacrifice. Versus, you know, you only really need two snakes.
I never noticed the seven number before.
Do you ever really need any snakes?
No.
That's what I want to know.
Oh my goodness, snakes.
Like Indiana Jones over here.
Like, you got to think.
I hate snakes. that was a good Harrison Ford. I hate snakes.
But like, you got to think, like, this would be me. If I was on the ark, I would. That would have been a 40-day, 40-night nightmare. Like, for some of the animals.
So
that
God
you
was
know,
good to you and didn't put you in the ark.
PTL, my friend, that I didn't have to be on the ark.
That would be praise the Lord for those who don't know what that
like
was.
Like snakes, spiders,
puppy dogs.
Yeah, I love puppies, but like elephants. Elephants are mean, man.
Oh, you have some kind of traumatic. Okay, we're not going to go there. Moving on. You know what I want to know though is. Well, what I'm curious about is these Noah questions made me think of, I've seen previews for the new Noah movie coming out. And
Russell Crowe.
With Russell Crowe as Noah.
That sounds about right.
And isn't it
Anthony
Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins is like the bad guy.
No.
Isn't he the king?
No, Anthony Hopkins is...
Isn't he leading the village
like,
mocking people?
No, I think he's... No, that's someone else.
Oh, that's Anthony right.
Anthony Hopkins is like Noah's ancestor.
And Morgan Freeman's God again, right?
I think he's always
we're going to be waiting for it.
He's got a godly voice.
But I've seen previews. It looks like this Smooth big budget, eyes. Big effects movie.
Yeah.
And so like I don't know. I have not seen it, so I do not have a personal opinion on it. But I have to wonder. I'm like, because if you think about what the story of Noah is about, I can't see how secular movie production would actually... convey that accurately, you know, about, because the movie isn't just about the flood came and the rescuing the animals and rainbows and an adventure. It's about that the earth was so evil and God's judgment came and his story of redemption through that and fitting into the bigger narrative of everything, like the true meaning of behind the Noah story. And then now you've got Russell Crowe playing Noah. I'm not sure. Like, part of me wants to see it to see what they do with it. And part of me, like, just doesn't even want to bother with it. And maybe that's unfair. But
I would say it's kind of one of those. I think it's okay for us to be not necessarily on the fence. I think our response often when stuff like this comes out is we jump on board and we fully endorse. And we just say, like, oh, this is the greatest tool in the pot in the face of the earth.
Yeah,
like,
but I don't think those are the people producing it either.
No. And then on the flip side, I think we kind of have one neck-jerk reaction or knee-jerk reaction to these types of things. We either fully endorse or we fully reject. And I think this movie, I haven't seen it. I've seen a couple previews for it.
When does it come out?
Pretty quick here, I think. But I think it's... It might be a good conversation starter.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'll probably see it so that when my non-Christian friends see it and want to talk about it, I know what they're talking about.
And I think, you know, I don't know that...
maybe it's going to be a good gospel conversation starter.
Yeah, I don't know that it would be entirely accurate to the actual events of the story, but I don't know that we should find that surprising. I mean...
Oh, no, I was watching, that's what I'm saying. I don't think I will find that surprising.
Yeah, on the weekend... My mother-in-law was visiting, and we rented Captain Phillips.
Captain Morgan.
No.
That's what I like to call it.
Yeah, we rented some Captain Morgan and watched Captain Phillips. No, we did not. We watched Captain Phillips, the movie with Tom Hanks, and it was a brilliant movie. It was really quite good. I thought it was a bit slow at times, but other than that, like, it was a captivating story. And, you know, my mother-in-law kind of got up and made this comment, like, oh, that was true. I can't believe that happened. And I said, well, like... It was based on a true story. We don't know the dialogue that went on between this. And that's, you know, and that word based gives so much license. You know, and I was just watching an interview yesterday on Piers Morgan today on CNN, and there's a guy suing the production company for The Wolf of Wall Street because he's saying a character in that movie. I haven't seen it, but he's saying, and apparently that's a good thing.
Nor should you
see it. Yeah, but he was just saying there was.
We are not endorsing Wolf of Wall Street.
But he was just
saying, are the opposite.
I'm just using this as an illustration.
To be clear,
he was saying that
I've heard horrible things,
and that movie also apparently based on a true story. And he was just saying like
a horrible true story.
Yeah, there's a character that's depicted in the movie that he didn't give the rights to be.
Oh, because it depicts him.
But it's him. He's saying that's me, and it's depicting it in a negative light, and it's not true. It's not how I carried my life, and it's damaging, and I'm suing them. And, you know, and this guy's going through, like, oh, yeah, they say this in the movie. It never happened. That never happened. That never happened. It's just like you got to sell tickets at the end of the day. That's why they make movies.
You got creatives involved.
Right?
So the movie...
Noah.
Comes out... Yeah, Noah comes out on... This weekend comes
Friday?
Out. Yeah, I think Friday.
Maybe that's what we should all do. We should do a staff outing to see Noah so we can talk about it on the next B-Side.
It would be genius if they were like, it's only playing for 40 days. 40 minutes.
But there was early test screenings they tested it amongst certain groups, Jewish, Christian groups and stuff, and had pretty negative reaction. Mm-hmm. This is the studio. I've heard this a little while ago.
Which won't necessarily work against them.
So the studio, you know, had test screenings among certain people, and because they were quite troubled by the portrayal of Noah and what they did with the story, the trailers look like they're relatively faithful. I mean, there's a lot of gaps in the story. Mm-hmm. We don't know how Noah's neighbors treated him as he's building this massive ark. It doesn't tell us a word about how did this go over in the community, or how did this happen, or how did that happen, or how did the animals all come. Like, there's a lot that we're left wondering about.
There's a lot
about.
Of creative license to
there's
be
a lot
had.
Of,
and a lot of text and scripture, not just this story.
Yeah, there's a lot that's left open, which could be interpreted as you're retelling that story in an artistic way through the film. But the things they've done with it have not gone well. And as far as... those who are concerned about the faithfulness of the story to the biblical text. And I think but who knows about the finished product? Those were like the work in progress, like the pre-screenings. And I think the studio wanted the director to tame it down or change it so it would be. See, I mean, the studio wants to make money, so they want it. They want to tap. There's more and more films being made by big studios to tap into Christian stories, right?
Yeah.
The Son of God movie. We've seen the Nativity movie, Passion of the Christ.
And apparently, there's more on the way.
There's a special on that. What's coming out later? There's one coming out later this year in like the summer. I can't remember what they're making.
Son of God?
No, like later. Like there's another big one.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what it is.
Hearing about it. There aren't trailers out yet, but there's something coming out.
Is it
a
remake of the Exodus, the Ten Commandments? I thought that
There's something coming. Like, so I think what they've done is it's been proven through whatever, Nativity or Passion, that there's actually a lot of people that will pay. And if they can get churches behind movies and certain individuals, that they'll be – there's a lot of money to be made. So non-Christian studios going, hey, if we make stories – but they know that it has to be faithful. Otherwise, we'll go on the B side and say, don't see it. It's horrible. And nobody will go.
Yeah.
All four of you listening won't go. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But apparently it's – they've taken the story and launched all kinds of places with it. And some troubling things with Noah's character and kind of what's going on in his head. I'm very interested to see the six armed angels with flaming swords that come. I don't recall that from the text, but it's in the movie. And they come and fight.
Six armed angels?
Yeah, six armed angels that come and fight with flaming swords, come and fight the, I think, the king.
Oh, okay.
The rowdy.
There's all sorts of stuff.
I was right. Yeah. In December, there's an Exodus movie.
With
Jim Reeves in it? It's a Ridley Scott produced movie, I think, is the big... Christian Bale will star as Moses. Sigourney Weaver will co-star.
Aliens to Exodus.
And then there's actually another... They said five movies about the Bible. Well, one is Heaven is for Real, which is based on the book about somebody making up a story about going to heaven.
No, that one's. Oops. I think that.
I like what you did there. Yeah.
That's a different question. Kid. Yeah,
and then Mary, Mother of Christ. They're saying no. They're saying 2014 is the year of the Bible, and that there's five kind of Bible based. Let's call it four. By the way, Bible based movies coming out: Mary, Mother of Christ, Exodus, Heaven is for Real. That will be in a category called fantasy. Noah, and then the Son of God.
Okay, so moving on from those commentaries, you know, I think it'd be an interesting movie is talking about last week's sermon and what you don't see being made in the movie is the topic of Abraham. And what I found interesting, you're talking about, like, he was not a man who was like this really great, good man who God said, wow, there's such a good man that I'm going to, like, make a nation out of him. But I thought it interesting how you pointed out, like, where Abraham would have come from, like, the culture he would have come from. Mm-hmm. And then you talked about that it was his faith that was credited to him as righteousness. I'm not doing a good job of this. But anyway, so you had this whole discussion on there, and there was a great question that came from a community group of, like, if he had so much faith in God's promises, what is up with the whole Ishmael deal? Mm-hmm. Which is basically when he and his wife do not wait for the promised child and try to fulfill God's promises on their own.
Yeah.
By taking his her maidservant and having his first child through her. Mm-hmm. So if there's so much faith that's credited to him as righteousness, what is the deal with Ishmael?
I think one of the things to think about would be there's Abraham believes God promised and it's credit him as righteousness, Genesis 15 verse 6. But there's a progression in his faith. There's a journey. In Romans, Paul's looking at the positive side of his faith and that his faith persevered to the end. But there's definitely ups and downs in the journey of faith that Abraham has. I mean, he also lies about his wife being his sister twice, you know, so there's definitely like
where
highlights
fearful,
and lowlights.
Yeah.
Yeah, out of fear, out of not trusting God at all. And helping God along in the whole Ishmael Hagar story, which is chapter 16. But I would say like the story kind of, there's ups and downs in it. in Abraham's faith. But Genesis 22 is always seen as sort of the story that demonstrates his faith when God tells Abraham to sacrifice Isaac, take him up the mm-hmm. mountain and kill him. And Hebrews says that he believed. He believed that God would raise him from the dead. And so he was going to do it. He was, you know, he had every intention to sacrifice his son, believing that God would raise Isaac from the dead, that God would be true to his promise somehow.
Well, and sometimes I wonder if we look at biblical characters like this, and because we can read about them in a book of the Bible, we think their lives are like that long. And we forget that they are people like us. Like, we're people that are called out by God. If I look at my own life, I'm not saved by how awesome my faith is, but what my faith is in.
Yeah.
That's what's credited to me as righteousness. Because you talked about that, you know, the wages of sin is death. But the gift of God is eternal life. So, like, the righteousness I receive by faith is not of my own doing, but because of what mm-hmm. my faith is in. Mm-hmm. So that would be the same for Abraham, the same for David. Yeah. You talked about how David, because those are the two examples that you went back to, that Paul goes back to in the mm-hmm. Old Testament, and we know the story of David. David has like the Goliath moment where he's the only one, and he's a kid. Mm-hmm. He has this huge moment of his trust in God to help him have this victory, and then you get Bathsheba later on. Like, you have these up and downs in his in his life, but he writes in his psalm of how grateful he is for the grace of God in his life because he knows what a sinner he is. So he actually has this understanding of it's not how awesome he is because he has so much faith and what an awesome man he is, but how awesome God is and how gracious he is. So
Abraham wasn't saved by an unblemished faith.
No.
But he believed God's promises and it was counted to him as righteousness. And I think similarly, we may have times of doubt, times of struggle, times where we fail to believe God's specific promises to us, and we fail to believe that, you know, we struggle to believe that he's really there, or that we see his hand in this, and we struggle through some situation. This is life. And we have moments of great, you know, trust, and we leap in our faith and believe that God's going to do something big. And at other times we struggle and worry and are anxious, and there's ups and downs, and, you know, we aren't saved by the unwavering ability in ourselves to always believe everything. And therefore God's like, well, that's a 10 out of 10 on faith. So I'm going to say we believe God and it's credited to us as righteousness. God in his grace helps us in our belief. He supplies faith for us, empowers our believing. I think of the story of the man who's looking for healing from God, I think for his son. And he says, and Jesus says,
you don't even have to come.
If you believe, well, I'm thinking of the one where he says, if you're able to heal my son, and he says, if you're able, if you believe, Jesus tells him. And the man says, I believe, help my unbelief.
Hmm.
And so you see this kind of contrast, this tension between, yes, I do believe, Jesus, I believe that you can do this, and I'm struggling.
But I can't fathom.
Help me
in
with my unbelief. And I think what's modeled there is an illogical
system.
I think that man in that moment demonstrates, puts to words what we all always, yes, I believe. And yet I struggle with my belief. Help me to believe more. Help me to believe. I believe and I want to believe more. And this is just, or you think of Peter in the boat, you know, coming out of the, he believes and he also sees the waves.
And God refers to him as the rock, right? Yes. Like, yeah.
And it's funny because, like, I think in our lives, I can immediately, as soon as we start talking about this, I can think of this time in my life in one day where in the weirdest of circumstances, I was as kind of faith-filled as I've ever been and as faith, almost probably as faith-lacking. I was in Africa, we were going whitewater rafting. Before we're rafting, I'm terrified. I'm sure I'm going to die. It's going to be the worst. I'm nervous. We get out on the boats, an hour in, I almost die. Like, literally, like I spend close to 2 minutes under the water, like have this crazy experience, but I'm under the water and I'm going, all right, Lord, I'm ready to die. Like, I'm at peace, I'm calm, I'm like, and it's on you. And like, it was funny because like, you'd think the option should be switched. You should be gung-ho before you go rafting and, you know, oh, God's going to watch over me. And then, you know, terrified when you feel like you're at death's door. But it was like, the flip side happened in my life. And I can remember coming up and thinking that day, like, huh, here's an example of probably, like, great faith in a sense of, like, I want to look back on this and I want to remember, like, that feeling of just, like, I trust Jesus. Mm-hmm. And forget the in a sense. You know?
That's why it's, like, it's a lifelong journey. That's why Paul writes about the perseverance, the running the race. It's not doing the sprint, getting the gold medal, and then you're good for, like, the rest of things, right? Like, I even this last week, I was reading devotionals in the morning, and it was focusing on, like, trust and thankfulness. And when you're trusting and focusing on God, there's little room for anxiety and worry. And when you're grateful, there's little room for criticism and complaining. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, that's really deep. By like 4 hours later, I'm in sheer panic about something and not happy about something. And I was like, man, I made it 4 hours. Woohoo! Yay me, right? Well, like, I'm like, but at least I could go back to what I read that morning and like self-check and go, oh.
And that's,
so this is what we're talking about here, right? Like, yeah.
And that's one of the things, I'm not a huge Olympics guy. I pay attention. I like hockey and I might watch a few other things. But it's one of the things I actually enjoyed about listening to some of the athletes interviewed after, especially the ones that won and that were Canadian. But like this idea of this journey to get where they were, that there was a 4-year commitment. Like, it's been 4 years since it was in Vancouver. And for some of these people, this is what they worked on. Like, these female bobsled racers, like, that's where they spent time. That's where they put their time and energy. And there was self-doubt that they could win again. And there was ups and downs, and where there was probably days where they didn't feel like they were even going to qualify to get in, and there was probably crash days. But that there was this journey that wasn't smooth the whole way, but it was perseverant. And that's one of the things I thought was just so interesting, like, was that you hear again and again and again this narrative of putting your head down and going to work and doing the work of excellence. And I think the same can be said in a lot of ways for our faith, that, like, Philippians 2, we talk about working out our salvation. I don't think that's necessarily, like, meant to just be a exercise in understanding once and for all. I think that as Christians, that we're in this process of, you know, like what we call progressive sanctification, that we're working out our salvation with fear and trembling, and we're figuring it out as we go about life.
And what should lead us to, like, praise and wonder is the fact of that it's not about us scoring a 10.
No.
Like, we should strive to that out of gratitude, but it's not the faith that's counted to Abraham as righteousness is, as David understood it, is amazing and grace-filled because it's worth nothing without it being of God.
Yeah.
And I loved when you talked about, like, the wages, you know, when we work for things, it's like, no. The wages of sin is death. That's what we've earned. Mm-hmm. So if you think you've earned anything, that's what you've earned. Right? So anyway, good thoughts. I'm going to wrap it up for this week. And next week, just a moment, we're going to go back to a question. Someone had sent in a good question. So when someone does me wrong, do I still have to love them the same as always, like a best friend? So I thought that was a good question. We don't have time to address it today, so we are going to address it next week. All right. And send in your other questions from today. Or if you go see the Noah movie on the weekend, I don't know if we'll have a chance to see it by then. But
send in your movie reviews.
Yeah, there you go. Send in your movie reviews. Anyway, thanks for joining us on the B-side. Enjoy the rest of the snow, because it'll be gone.
I'm sorry.
All right. See you later. Thanks for coming.